It does raise the question, though, of Christians worldwide, and why, out of all the people groups on planet Earth, why persecution of Christians puts them in the number one slot of the most persecuted group on planet Earth. I want you to look into that topic with me, if you would, please. And I can't think of a better person to guide our conversation than Raymond Ibrahim. He is a fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and an associate fellow at the Middle East Forum. His blogs are simply fabulous. I hope that you will follow him. We've put all of our information on our website at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org, including his latest book. I commend all of it to you, and I really do thank God for the work that Raymond is doing, because he keeps this conversation going, particularly before government authorities who need to understand that something is amiss here. Raymond, the warmest of welcomes. And let me just simply ask you, some people might say, well, it's a rudimentary question. It's probably a self-evident truth. But I think it bears a little deeper conversation. Why is it that Christians remain the number one persecuted group on the planet?
Hi, Janet. Thanks for having me. Excellent question. The reason is, you were talking about North Korea, which, of course, is one of the worst, if not the worst, countries for Christians. But if you really look at that same report and that same study, you find out that approximately 40 or 41 of the top 50 worst countries to be a Christian are Islamic countries. And so we can say that the majority of the persecution of Christians happening is in the Islamic world. So we need that as a kind of a backdrop for what I'm going to say. So the first reason, of course, is because Christianity is the largest religion in the world. Wherever you look around, you're going to find Christians. And again, in the context of the Islamic world, where most of this persecution is going on, the reason Christians are there in significant numbers is because, of course, they are the indigenous inhabitants of what we call today the Arab world, the Middle East, and so forth, countries like Egypt and Syria and Turkey and all of North Africa, Morocco, Libya, Tunisia, Algeria. And all these regions were, of course, Christian nations before the Islamic Jihad was unleashed in the 7th century, and they were slowly became Islamic. So till today, you have millions of Christians in these regions who are, of course, under persecution. In Egypt, you have, you know, at least 10 million. Some people quote much larger numbers. In Syria, of course, you have 10-15% of the population. In Iraq, you had a significant Christian population, which has been decimated. So one of the reasons, of course, is the large amount of numbers. The other reason is that, unlike all these other religions, Hinduism and Buddhism and Judaism, which are really religions that are tied to a particular people or ethnicity. Buddhism is in Asia, Hinduism, Judaism with Jews. Christianity is a proselytizing faith, and so it goes and wins over numbers. So outside of the Middle East, where you have these large numbers of Christians, now you go into sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, where they're not indigenous, but you get Christian missionaries, Catholic and Protestant, who go there, and they convert them to Christianity. Now, of course, in Islam, leaving Islam and becoming or converting into another religion, which by and large is Christianity, because of this proselytizing element, is a capital offense. And so lots of Muslims who become Christians are attacked and killed as apostates to Christianity. And even the act of proselytizing, as you just were mentioning in the North Korean story, going into an Islamic country or, of course, in North Korea and proselytizing is a ban. In Islam, it's Islamic law bans Christians from talking about their religion and trying to entice Muslims to convert to it. And it's also seen as blasphemy. When you speak about Christianity as if it's the truth, you are, of course, questioning the legitimacy of Islam. And so it's blasphemy. So you can see it's proselytizing, it's blaspheming against Islam, and it creates apostasy, all three which are banned against Islam. And the final reason, of course, is Christianity is really the quintessential religion of martyrdom, beginning with Christ himself and, the apostles and all their followers in the early church. Christianity, Jesus himself said, whoever denies me before men, I will deny him before my Father. So it's had a premium of, you know, being proud to say you're a Christian, even under the threat of death. Now, other religions, and chief among them Islam, do not have this component. In fact, in Islam, there's something called taqiyya. And this is a teaching which says if you're a Muslim and you're under the authority of the non-Muslims, and let's say your life is in danger, you can feign and pretend to renounce Islam, and you can curse Muhammad, and all this is legitimate. And so you can see how the Christian himself stands out because of all these three reasons and why they are so exposed to persecution and the number one group around the world.
Wow. What an eye-opening set of comments. Thank you for that, Raymond. I appreciate it. In fact, particularly, I appreciate the couple of things. Number one, the historical aspect of this, that so many of the Islamic countries today were, in fact, at one point, anything but Islamic countries. The second is this aspect of martyrdom. And third, the fact that Christianity is not tied necessarily to a particular people group, which I think, forgive me, but I think that says something about the transcendence and the universality of the message as well. Fills that hole in the human heart that was designed to have that personal relationship with the Lord. Well, let me take a break and come right back. Again, what a treat always, because I learned so much to spend time with Raymond Ibrahim. And by the way, his excellent book on our website. Do some people who are hearing this conversation and have not heard our conversation in the past on your tremendous book might say, well, wait a minute, why is it a new war on Christians coming from Islam?
Well, it's a new war. That's a very good question. It's a new war because it's been a long and continuous, really almost 14-century-long war. But something very interesting happened during the colonial era. It's actually the exact opposite of what we're taught in you know, the ivory towers about the significance of the colonial era. In the colonial era, the West demonstrated its might, and you know, we're living in a day of might makes right, and Islam itself imbues a sort of respect for power, and that's exactly how the Muslim world started. People saw the might of Islam and joined the bandwagon, so to say. So when the West was unapologetically strong militarily and just taking over land, and so many people in the Islamic world turned to the West. And if you really go back a few decades, if you look at, you know, Egypt, Alexandria, Cairo, Syria, 100 years ago, you're going to think, especially if you look at the cities, that you're looking at Western countries. All the men were in suits. The women, there was no such thing as a hijab or a veil. Women are in dresses, high heels, or hair showing. And religion was a very kind of background thing that people just did almost culturally. It was not followed. But it's a new war because I believe that in as much as the West has gone the opposite direction and basically apologized for itself, shown a weaker side, pushed Muslims back to their own heritage. So Muslims have naturally developed a sort of contempt, I would say, for the West and have naturally turned to their own heritage. And in as much as they turn to their heritage, they start seeing things like what we're talking about, the persecution or subjugation of Christians is a part of Islam. It's historically demonstrable. It's in the scriptures of Islam. And so if you push Muslims back to their own heritage and say it's great, follow it, well, they are, and they're turning away from the West, and they're growing their beards, and they're wearing hijabs, and we're seeing what we're seeing. And hence, it's a new war.
You know, Raymond, what's so interesting about this is it's somewhat counterintuitive, at least, I think, to our thinking here in the West, which is we have this presupposition that the Arab Spring, note the air quotes around the word Arab Spring when I say that, that somehow what we presume to be sort of Jeffersonian reformists, that you'd be moving more toward the idea of freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, freedom to decide to believe what you want to believe, as opposed to inheriting what was necessarily ethnic or cultural, but rather you've sifted and weighed and you have the liberty to make your own decisions about your worldview and what you're going to believe about God or not believe about God. And yet we seem to be seeing the antithesis. Why is that?
I think the reason is, and the media especially played a huge role in this, is exactly what you just said, you know, portraying or rather projecting our standards, which you just delineated, onto a people of a different civilization and a different worldview. And so what you really saw was happening is you had these secular autocrats who are from that earlier age that I was talking about when, you know, people or Muslims were more westernized, such as Mubarak and, of course, Bashar Assad and the Arab nationalist movements and so forth. And then now you have this people fighting, which we say, oh, look, they want freedom. They want democracy, Jeffersonian, and this and that, because that's what we understand. And so naturally we assume that's what they're doing. But it's not necessarily that. And I say that with the caveat that there are Muslims and Arabs and people in that area who do want, of course, something more akin to what you have in the West. But there's also those who don't, and they want something different. They want actually to, and we've seen it. And actually, if you look at the history, recent history, what we've been seeing demonstrates what we're talking about, which is all these countries, Egypt, you got the Muslim Brotherhood, and they tried to really sabotage the country. Syria, these guys that are there right now, which we'll talk about, are destroying the nation, killing Christians. Libya, constantly. Christians are being hunted door to door, being slaughtered. And all these are countries. Iraq, the same thing. Christians have been decimated. In Afghanistan, the last church was destroyed under U.S. auspices. So you really come to find out that what we're helping and what we're portraying as some sort of liberal democratic movement is, as you said, the the antithesis of that, and we're seeing the true nature of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on two countries, and Raymond, I love our time together, and it always goes by far too quickly. Let me go to Libya first. We may never get to the bottom of what happened at Benghazi for whatever reason, but you did point out something that I think particularly this audience needs to know, and that is that Christians are today still being executed in Libya. You wrote about this at the end of February. Who is doing this? Because we again, in the West, seem to think that there's a kind of power vacuum there in Libya, but clearly there can't be if they're going after Christians.
Well, I mean, in the generic sense, it's Islamists, if you will, or jihadis. It's the same group that the United States empowered, which at the time we knew had al-Qaeda links and who helped overthrow Gaddafi. It's the same guys, and they're now, you know, it's the same thing, you know. So they got rid of Gaddafi. To us, that's great. Look, they want freedom. But you find out, no, they want something else. They want a pure Islamic Sharia state. So they are now literally going door-to-door and killing Christians. What you're referring to is the seven Christians who died last week. I don't even know if this has made the media yet. Yesterday, another Christian was pulled out of his house, found out, and shot and killed. And actually, he's not dead. He's in critical condition in the hospital. And I've seen pictures of him. It's just really, it's terrible. All because of the crime, which we were talking about with North Korea, because he's a Christian.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I thank you for doing what you do, because you bring these stories to light when so often they get ignored by the general press. In Syria, you amazing story that Christians there are literally having to pay protection to be protected, a kind of tax, if you will. Explain.
Well, this is amazing, because what's happening right now is standard classical Islam. Basically, Quran 9:29 calls on Muslims to fight Christians and Jews by name until it conquers them. I mean, they either convert to Islam or they pay what's called jizya, tribute, which is money for them not to be killed. And in Syria today, we are reliving history that happened 14 centuries ago, where Muslims are now giving Christians the option, you either convert to Islam or you start paying extortion money or we kill you. And this is all grounded in Islam.
Well, notes to file. Next time Raymond gets invited, allow much more time. Raymond, thank you so, so much. Again, In the Market with JanetParshall.org. Friends, I want you to go there so that on the right-hand side, you can certainly learn more about Crucified Again, Raymond's newest book, and also we've linked to his website so you can follow what he has to say, where you won't read it very often anyplace else, and you can follow it regularly. We'll be back.